Hi, how do I keep my dignity when my husband is flaunting his affair in front of me by spending weekends at her place? But the twist of the question is, he says he loves me and only wants me, and that his relationship will end soon. How do I deal with all of this? It's driving me crazy.
So first of all, what's your first name?
Debbie.
Debbie. So Debbie, I understand that your husband's having an affair and that he
claims
nonetheless to be with you. And I understand that you feel that it's a bit of an attack on your dignity that the affair is, like, flaunted in front of you. I got the circumstances. What I don't get is exactly what your question is.
I guess, how do I deal with this? I feel like my self-esteem is low because of it, and, you know, even though he says he loves me and they're only friends, I just don't know how to deal with it.
Okay, so I'm not 100% sure on what you mean by deal with it. There's about 1,000 things you could mean by that. But let me pluck out 2 very strong possibilities and take a few minutes to deal with each of them. I think it'll be helpful for you and many other people. First of all, if your spouse is having an affair, I want to share with you a little bit about the psychology of an adulterer as it relates to Debbie's circumstances and share with you a piece of advice that I think will be helpful. When adulterers begin their affair, they lie about it. They're secretive. Why? Because they know it's wrong. It's human nature. When we're doing something that's wrong, we don't want to get caught because we'll feel caught, and it's humiliating. But the longer the affair goes on, and it doesn't really take too long for them to get to this point, they start to feel that there's something very right about the relationship. I mean, adulterers, generally speaking, are not sitting back there saying, what a dirtbag I am, what a jerk, what an immoral, selfish, insensitive person. I've always been this way, and I always will be that way. I've spoken to many adulterers. That's not what they're thinking, not what they're saying. Instead, they are feeling like, this is my soulmate. I've never felt this way before. And because of that, they come up with this compelling rationalization for why there's nothing wrong with this relationship. They begin to redefine words and publish new dictionaries. They redefine the term marriage and divorce and mistress. Mort, why are you calling her my mistress? She's not my mistress. Really? She's not? I thought she was. No, she's my girlfriend. Oh, I see. I thought you were still married. No, we're not married. We got divorced 6 months ago. You did? I just spoke to your wife last week. You're not divorced. Well, not technically, but emotionally, I divorced her. It's unbelievable. You know, the intellectual gymnastics that go on to justify what it is they're doing so that they don't have to feel that what they're doing is wrong, because in their heart it feels so right. They don't want to feel that it's wrong. But yet, every time they lie about it and hide it, it's a reminder to them that it is wrong. So you see this conflict that they're dealing with? There's this inner conflict that on the one hand, the more they lie about it and hide it, the more they're reminded it's wrong. On the other hand, their experience in the relationship is inspiring them or motivating them to justify why it's not wrong. So how do they resolve that? Very often, one way the adulterer begins to try to resolve it is they come to a point which is the ultimate irony in the history of the universe. I'm going to be honest about my affair. I never really understood this. I mean, if you're going to have an affair, you might as well lie about it. Why grow a conscience at that point? But I really already answered my own question. The reason they want to grow a conscience at that point is so that they can feel a little better about this conflict that they're struggling with. I'm going to be honest about it. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm going to come out into the open. In fact, many people even make one of the worst parenting mistakes they could ever make in the history of the world, which is I'm going to be so open about it, I'm going to introduce my kids to this person. And what they want to try to do is they want to try to get you, their friends, their mother, the kids, anybody around them to accept this relationship and to not judge it and to be open to it as if it's a normal relationship and there's nothing wrong with it. And so they're going to come out with it, so to speak. And one of the people they want to come out with it to, one of the most important people, is you. Because if they can get you to accept it, if they can be out in the open with it, then they don't have to feel like they're lying about it. And if they're not lying about it and they're not hiding it, then they don't have to feel that it's wrong. So that's kind of the psychology behind it. Now, here's the advice. The advice is, if your spouse is trying to come out, so to speak, about their affair, do everything in your power to not be a part of it and not allow it. If they even try to breathe a syllable of the mistress's or mister's name, if they try to allude to the relationship in any way, cut them off. Do not participate in the discussion. Hold your stomach and double over. Let them know that you feel sick and nauseous and that they should be more discreet and not to ever mention their name or allude to that relationship in your presence, that it makes you sick and it's disgusting. One woman told me that her husband responded by saying, what are you talking about? You want me to lie to you about it? And I said to her, bingo, that's exactly right. I know it sounds strange, but I hope I've explained it enough that it makes sense to you. If your spouse is having an affair, you want them, I want them, to be lying to you about it. Because every time they lie to you about it, it's a reminder to them that it's wrong. You know, I hope you won't mind the analogy. This is what I'm about to say is not a political commentary. It's not a moral commentary. I'm merely using this as a, I think, an excellent example of the sort of the psychology of an adulterer that I just mentioned. You know, a number of years ago, in the gay community, it became very, very important for homosexuals to come out of the closet, right? In other words, there was a time where if you were gay, nobody knew about it except for your lovers. Right? I mean, it was frowned upon, you were ashamed, you were embarrassed, and it was something that was a secret. But then there was a big movement in the homosexual community to come out of the closet. And that movement has obviously had a tremendous impact on our culture and on the way gay people live today. Now, why was that so important to them? Well, I think I explained why. Because when they were lying about it, when they were hiding it, when they were being secretive, it made them feel as if it was wrong. But from their perspective, it's not wrong, and they didn't want to feel that way anymore. And they recognized that if I can find the courage to come out about this, it might be difficult at first, but ultimately I'll feel a lot better. And I won't feel that what I'm doing is something to be ashamed of. So that's one part of the answer to the question that I wanted to offer you, Debbie. I wanted to explain a little bit about the psychology of an adulterer and advise you to not allow your husband to speak to you at all about the affair and to kind of push him underground again about it. Second point that I think will be helpful. Oh, you said, I almost lost my train of thought, but you said that you feel, I can't remember your exact words, but you feel that your dignity is being attacked, that you have no self-respect. So I want to offer you and everybody else another paradigm on this, and I'm hoping that the way I view this will help you view it differently, and that will result in you feeling differently about it. I actually think it's ironic when people tell me that they feel like a doormat, and that they have no self, that their self-respect is being attacked because their spouse is treating them so horribly or having an affair. Why is it ironic to me? Because to me, it's your spouse who's losing his self-respect. A person who remains committed to their marriage and is behaving in an admirable and beautifully loving way in their marriage, despite the fact that their spouse is having an affair, that is a tremendously difficult thing to do. That takes a person of very substantial character. It's a tremendous achievement. And in my eyes, that person has elevated their stature. And the person who's having an affair, they're behaving in a way that's soiling their soul and diminishing their stature. In other words, in my eyes, the person who's having the affair has lost their dignity. And the person who is consistently loving and committed to the marriage and to great marital patterns is elevating their dignity. Let me put it to you like this. I believe that our self-worth, our self-esteem, does not come from how people treat us. It comes from how we treat them. That's why it's called self-esteem, self-worth, self-respect, because it comes from the self. And if you're feeling like a doormat, if you're feeling like your dignity is being attacked, then I want to challenge you to recognize that that might be because you're trying to draw your sense of self from how people treat you. But that's not their fault. That's your fault. Because our self-respect, our dignity should not come and ultimately does not come from how people treat us. It comes from how we treat them. I'll share with you a quick story, phenomenal story, that I think illustrates this point. My brother-in-law, a number of months ago, heard a Holocaust survivor speak. And towards the end of her speech, she was asked to just share what she considers to be the most memorable and impactful story of her whole survival experience. She shared that it was about 10 days after she was liberated, and she was a teenager, and her teenage friend were kind of moseying in the fields outside the DP camp, and they encountered a Nazi SS soldier. As you may or may not know, after the war, some of the Nazi soldiers were on the run. I mean, they were trying to avoid being prosecuted and whatever consequences were coming their way. And so some of them, you know, they hadn't slept in days. They were starving. You know, they were wandering in the woods. And so these two teenage girls met up with one of these SS soldiers. How would you feel if you were a survivor, a teenage girl recently liberated? These people that this man represents, and he was one of them, killed your brothers, your sisters, your mothers, your fathers, and 6 million of your people. And there he stands, exhausted, disheveled, hungry, and sick. This woman explained that her friend reached into her pocket and gave this man a piece of bread. I have the chills, practically almost in tears, literally, every time I tell the story. I'd like to think that I would have done the same thing. I pray for all of you that you can have that kind of dignity not be vindictive, to not be vengeful, to be forgiving, and to be loving, and to recognize that the quality of our character and our dignity comes not from how people treat us, but from how we treat them. And at that moment, it was obvious who had lost their dignity in the war. It certainly was not those two Jewish girls who had been tortured and starved and almost worked to death for years in a concentration camp. No. No. It was the Nazis.